Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 95 event, which takes place in Brasilia, Brazil. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight cards from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last events, we went 3-0-1 on our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 94, to profit 6.45 units. We won our plays on Michael Johnson, Islam Makhachev, and Gabriel Benitez while pushing Albert Morales. We also had plays for Bellator 161 and lost both of our bets on Tony Johnson Jr. and Sirwan Kakai for a total of 5 units. Lastly, we also lost our 2 1-unit free bets on Belal Muhammad by decision, which lost by 30 seconds, and a straight bet on Augusto Lalego. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 95 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Glyko Franca, who is 14-4, and Gregor Gillespie, who is 7-0 and making his UFC debut. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Gillespie minus 150, the comeback on Franca at plus 110. Immediately, the line flipped, and it got to about $1.50, I think, $1.60 for Franca. But right now, according to our sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu, it is currently Franca minus 130. The comeback on Gillespie is at plus 110, so action coming back in Gillespie's way as well. There will be two-way action on this fight, especially with the limits being a little bit lower on the opener. I'm sure they're pretty much even as we speak right now, too, with Franca being the slight favorite. Honestly, you can make a case either way here as far as the line goes. I could see why people believe that Franca should be favored in this fight. I could see why people would be shocked to see it because Gillespie, as a stud wrestler in his background, I mean, I could understand him being favored as well. So it is definitely a tough matchup to predict because there's a lot of variables here that, you know, we're not going to find out until they get in there and battle it out. So getting into the backgrounds of both real quick, of course, Gillespie is the hyped wrestling prospect. I mean, he's 30 years old right now, so I would have liked to see him a few years younger get into the sport, but he has battled through some adversity throughout his life, and especially even in college when he was actually a national champion wrestler, four-time All-American wrestler, he was actually battling through some drug addiction and some medical issues along the way as well. So that kind of, I think, gave him a little bit of tough spots to really pursue his MMA career as he wanted to in that stage, you know what I mean, after he got out of college or whatnot too. So he's had a tough life. He's overcame a lot, and he's definitely a gifted athlete and a special talent for sure. And I think that it can translate well into the UFC just with his skill set. I mean, if you look at his fights, I mean, it is against lower-level competition on regional circuit, but his wrestling and his overall game is definitely improving, and he's got a lot of potential. I mean, his wrestling alone, he's got such a quick shot, as expected. I mean, he's a fantastic grappler. I mean, just a stud wrestler. So he brings that into the cage with him. And again, his stand-up is getting better, but he is a little bit suspect still on the feet. I don't like his defense all that much. He hasn't been tested in that area as well either. And then also, if you look at his fight, especially his last fight, the fight that he went 3 rounds, most of his fights have finished in the first round, by the way. I mean, he gets people out of there pretty quick, usually takes them down, takes their backs or whatever, either pounds them out, or wins by submission. So he's a talented grappler, as I mentioned already, but when he faces a little bit of adversity thus far, again, if you go back and watch a 3-round fight that he recently had, before making his UFC debut, he got some tough spots. He got on the feet. He got landed on a little bit on the ground. He actually got controlled a little bit on the ground. He got out of all those bad spots, and he was able to get by and win the decision, which, you know, was close, but at the same time, he deserved to win. So he got out of some bad spots, and I guess he did get some kind of test there, which you'd like to see. But this is another test in Franca. I mean, Franca, obviously an Ultimate Fighter vet. I mean, the guy has had success already in the octagon. And I know he's had some a tough loss against James Vick, but he was game in that fight as well. So he's faced better competition overall. Franca, I think, as far as the skill set goes, I mean, the guy likes to take the fight to the ground himself, and he's very capable of doing so in most cases. Has outstanding wrestling, underrated wrestling, and to be exact. And then on ground, he could do some damage for sure. Even on the feet, the guy has power. The guy has skill. The guy's just a dangerous fighter. For Gillespie, this is definitely going to be the hardest test of his life. I mean, Franca has that experience, has that confidence about him, has the ability to beat Gillespie on the feet. He might even get top position on the ground. So this is going to definitely be an interesting fight. The problem with Franca is I can see Gillespie having some success on the ground, get him down, get him some takedowns along the way. Franca does tend to gas a little bit, and his strike defense isn't the greatest either. So, I mean, not that Gillespie is going to have a ton of success on the feet. I think Franca still has the edge there, but still, both these guys are very hittable, so you never know what's going to happen and how it really plays out on the feet or on the ground. So I've been going kind of back and forth on this fight, to be honest with you, myself. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Gillespie. I opened him the slight favorite. I believe that that probably is accurate, but this is a stern test for him. And as far as betting goes, honestly, this is a type of fight I would just avoid altogether. See how good Gillespie looks before you actually, you know, make a decision and put any kind of cash on him as a dog or as a favorite moving forward in the future. And if Franca does come away with a win here as well, I think that Franca, I mean, this will be a solid notch on his resume, and he moves forward and continues to kind of improve. He's still young enough too at age 25 that, I mean, we can see Franca definitely make a run in the UFC, put a string of wins together and kind of get himself in the mix at lightweight at some point. But we'll see. That might not happen with the loss here, so we'll have to see how it all plays out. So my official pick, I guess, is Gillespie, but it's not a very confident pick until we see how things kind of play out.
Gillespie, he hails from Edinburgh College, which is actually the factory that produced some really talented wrestlers that transitioned to MMA in the past, like Josh Koscheck, Chris Honeycutt in Bellator right now. He had a lot of success in wrestling, four-time All-American, national champion, as Nick said. And the other thing that I think is helping him is he's at a relatively good gym. I mean, we weren't always the highest on Belmore Kickboxing Academy back when it was just Costas Philippou there, because we were like, you know what, who's he training with? How's he's not getting any better. And then now we've got Gregor Gillespie there. We've got Ryan LaFleur trains there. Andre Harrison trains there from Titan. So, you know, there are definitely some good talented guys at that gym now. And so I think that his training is actually coming along just fine. Now, in terms of Glyco Franca, he is more well-rounded than Gillespie at this point. He definitely should be a little bit of the better striker, although his striking is not his strong suit. And he should have a little bit better of a submission game than Gillespie. The thing with Franca, though, is if you watch his fights, I think his best thing that he has going for him in his fights is his grappling. Against James Vick, he, you know, won the first round because he was aggressive, got some takedowns, got top position. So against Gillespie, that's going to be a lot more difficult. With how talented of a wrestler Gillespie is, I don't see Franca winning a lot of the scrambles. I don't see him getting top position, especially early in this fight. Maybe if Gillespie starts to slow down, then Franca could get top position later, as, you know, Gillespie starts to tire if this fight does get past the second round. But for the most part, I just see Gillespie securing top position, utilizing that wrestling training. Even though he's going to be in hostile territory in Brazil, I expect Gillespie to be well prepared for this situation. And I think that, you know, Gillespie can come in here and still pull off the game plan, which is get top position and start pounding away, because he's still not great with wrestling and he's still not a great striker. So that's going to be the game plan for a while yet, until he really starts to settle in and get more comfortable with the rest of his game. And I just think that that still could be enough, because we've seen in the past a lot of really talented wrestlers are able to come in with a limited skill set and still have success. So I think this is a fight that Gillespie can and possibly will win. So my pick is going to be Gillespie. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Vicente Luque, who is 9-5, taking on Hector Urbina, who is 25-9. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
Up in Luque, minus 475, the comeback on Urbina at plus 325. Right now, over at five times, it's Luque minus 430, Urbina is plus 345. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been two-way action on this fight as well. Early action came in on the dog Urbina, and now as we get closer to fight time, Luque is getting some love and respect as well from the bettors out there. This fight's pretty clear cut to me. I mean, honestly, there's not an area I think that Urbina is better than Luque in. I mean, I opened him a high favorite for a reason. I do have a lot of respect for Urbina. I think he's kind of underrated overall in his career. I think he's just a tough, savvy journeyman in MMA, and he made it finally to the UFC. And I don't think he's a joke. I don't think you can kind of underestimate or overlook him, really, because the guy is dangerous. I mean, he has some power on the feet. He's got that experience. He's faced good competition throughout his career. He actually has a little bit of underrated wrestling. He's got some submission skills. So the guy's dangerous, definitely. I mean, you cannot take him lightly. I don't think Luque will. The problem here is Luque is just better. I mean, he's a better striker. He's a better wrestler. He's a better grappler. I mean, in all areas, I think Luque is definitely a really good rising prospect at 170 pounds. I mean, he's been in the sport for a little while, of course. And if you look at Luque's resume overall, it doesn't look that great, especially with five losses on it, but he's way beyond that. I mean, the guy is actually very skilled and not just, I mean, your average Joe at all. I mean, he's skilled in every area, especially, like I said, I think he's got that killer instinct and he's has the ability to finish on the feet or on the ground. I mean, his jiu-jitsu offensively is sneaky good as well. So I just think if Luque avoids maybe getting caught in that guillotine choke that Urbina has, which is great. I mean, once he gets that thing around your neck, it is tough to get out of it. Or if he doesn't get caught by a big bomb or something like that, which I don't think Luque will, Luque is probably going to have his way with Urbina. Probably does get the finish here. If somehow it does go to the scorecards, Luque wins on the scorecards as well. So it's pretty clear cut to me. I just think Luque outmatches Urbina. He's going to get another win here and kind of keep on rolling, because I think the Luque is going to be a tough out for a lot of welterweights for sure in the future as well. So Luque is my pick, and I'm excited to watch this fight because it should be pretty fun.
There's not a lot to say about this fight for me. Vicente Luque is well-rounded, has good pop in his hands. He has a pretty solid overall ground game. He doesn't have a lot of weaknesses, except maybe against a really good wrestler like in his loss against Graves. But against Hector Urbina, Urbina does have some power. He does have a little bit of wrestling, and he can pull off, you know, a pretty slick guillotine choke. But really, if Urbina does not win this fight in the first minute or two, I see Luque completely taking over and dominating it and probably getting a finish. So Urbina just isn't that talented. I'm actually kind of confused why they made this matchup in the first place. Luque is coming off some really impressive victories where he just completely destroyed his opposition, while Urbina's coming off of a loss. Like, to me, it just seems like they're setting up Luque to look really good here. So I expect that he will look really good. So my pick is going to be Vicente Luque. Now dropping down to the lightweight division for the finale headliner of the Fight Pass prelims, we have Alan Patrick, who is 13-1, taking on Stevie Ray, who is 19-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Ray -280, the comeback on Patrick, at +200. Right now, over five dimes, it is Ray -165. The comeback on Patrick is down to +145. So, needless to say, there is more action coming in on Patrick as a dog here. Ray is not getting that much respect. I thought he would, honestly, because Ray's looked pretty good so far in the UFC. Cage Warriors, former Cage Warriors champion as well. So, it's not like the guy has fought bombs outside of the UFC. And then once he made it to the UFC, I think he's looked great, and he only gets better. I mean, he's only 26 years old as well. The guy has a total skill set. I mean, he's got the striking to finish most guys on the feet. He's got the ability to wrestle, submit guys on the ground as well. He can grind fighters out. He's a very well-rounded guy that's only getting better, only getting more confident. And I really like what I see from Ray thus far. Now, Patrick, on the other hand, to me, is also another very talented, well-rounded guy in some aspects. I mean, to me, I think he underachieves in some ways. I mean, I expected better from him in the Tysonov fight. That really, I think, woke me up and showed me that, you know, when facing adversity like that, I mean, you want to see a fighter step it up and at least hang in there and put up a fight. And he just got smoked in that fight against Tysonov. And where I think, I mean, Ray does have a little bit more of that quality in it, where he would probably step up. And even if he gets beat, I mean, he's going to go out, you know, the right way and in a war or whatnot. And Patrick just, I don't know, the heart, the factor that he just kind of fought that bad, to me, just doesn't sit right with me. So it kind of sits in the back of my head. Now, Patrick, of course, rebounded since then. He has a win over Damian Brown, which Damian Brown is probably a little bit underrated, to be honest with you. But that being said, it was a pretty competitive fight as well. I just think that Patrick, He just outclassed here. I mean, I understand that the betting window right now where people coming in believing that Patrick might be able to out-wrestle Ray, and that's probably his way to win, because if this fight stays on the feet, although he has had success against fighters like Mike Dessy in the past a little bit, I guess, I mean, that was a controversial decision win for Patrick for sure on the feet there. But with all that being said, I just think that Patrick's going to probably have to wrestle here to get the job done, and I don't think he's going to be able to control Ray all that easy. And on the feet, I think Ray is the better fighter. I think he can have a lot more success against Patrick. If it goes to the ground, I can see both fighters kind of scrambling for position, getting top position along the way as well. But I just think that Ray's probably going to do enough if it hits the scorecards to edge it out. And if there is going to be a finish in this fight, it's Ray finishing Patrick, because I think offensively, Ray's definitely more talented, more gifted, and he's the better finisher of the two. So scorecards, Ray, Patrick, probably that's his best chance to win if it's a close competitive decision, maybe controversial type of decision. But outside of that, inside would be Ray, in my opinion, as well. So it's hard not to pick Ray. And I do disagree with all the early action. In fact, it's probably a favorite or pass situation at this point on Ray at the betting window right now. So I would definitely check into that a little bit. But overall, I mean, I'm hoping it's a pretty competitive fight, but I do think that Ray's probably going to come out on top.
Even though Patrick comes from a kind of a kickboxing striking background, it's been his wrestling and his ability to get takedowns that has helped him win a lot of his fights. He kind of puts a lot of pressure on his opponents looking for takedowns. Even if he can't get it, the judges usually award him for his aggression and the takedown attempts and maybe pressing his opponent against the cage trying to get the takedown. And when he's not looking for takedowns, you know, he throws a couple flashy kicks, some spinning attacks every once in a while, mixes it up. But overall, I've actually been pretty disappointed at his actual striking ability. Now, Stevie Ray, on the other hand, I think he is a sensational striker. And his takedown defense is actually pretty good. You saw that in his UFC debut against Marcin Vandel, who is a fighter that was repeatedly looking to take the fight to the floor and try to lock in, a leg lock or a knee bar or something. And Ray was able to stifle most of those takedowns and then avoid the submissions and then just pound away and ended up getting a stoppage victory. Now, I am very impressed with Stevie Ray overall. I think he's one of the more underrated fighters in the lightweight division. He's on a nice little streak. And more than anything, the only thing that concerns me is the fact that he hasn't fought since October of last year. Other than that, I'm perfectly thinking that he's on the fringe of the top 15. And Alan Patrick could definitely be the type of victory that could propel him right in there. I think if Patrick can't get takedowns, then Stevie Ray is going to land some big shots with his very heavy hands, and I don't see how Patrick survives it. I mean, you go back and see what happened when Patrick couldn't get takedowns against Mirbek Taisimov, and he got taken out, you know, pretty quickly, kind of an early second round stoppage. So I think if Patrick can't get the takedowns against Ray, then I can see Ray pulling off a similar feat here with a TKO victory. So my pick is going to be Stevie Ray. Now, moving on for the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Eric Silva, who is 18-7 with one no contest, and Luan Chagas, who is 14-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I opened Silva -175 to come back on Chagas at +135. And to my surprise, especially a little while ago, it looks like Chagas did get some love at the betting window, and the line did flip. Now, that being said, it was sitting and settling at around -150, +120 for Silva for a little while. And it just, like I said, recently flipped. In fact, if you guys check out the Five Rounds podcast with Brett Okamoto, I was on that earlier this week as well. And we talked about this fight on that podcast, and the line was +120 at that time. So a sharp action coming in, flipping the line on Chagas, and I do believe it, and I understand it in a way. I just thought the overall opinion would be that Silva, I mean, with all the hype and everything that Silva kind of has going for him, I mean, he's still a popular fighter. I know he hasn't had the greatest success as of late. I mean, he's kind of been a disappointment, to be honest with you, because a lot of people were thinking that Silva was going to be an eventual welterweight champion of the UFC. A lot of people thought that he was the next big thing. He just hasn't lived up to it, and part of that being his cardio has definitely been terrible. I mean, throughout his career, even though he's made it three rounds before, it just hasn't been what you expect with a championship level fighter. And that goes along with bad defense, strike defense, and a chin that's definitely been exposed now and vulnerable. So Offensively, Silva's definitely talented, man. I mean, he's a great striker. He has a lot of power, and I'm saying great striker because the guy has, again, that killer instinct. He's got knockout potential. He does get a little bit sloppy in his aggression at times, so he needs to clean that up, but he could definitely be one of the more dangerous strikers at welterweight when he's on. And then on the ground, of course, he's got a smooth, smooth submission game. I mean, he's got good wrestling. He's able to get the takedowns, and he's able to finish the guys in most cases on the ground as well. It's just, he tires. Again, with that defense being so bad, his chin is vulnerable. He gets put out sometimes. I mean, you just can't trust him these days. So I would not lay juice on Silva. So again, with sharper action coming in, hitting Chagas a little bit, I do agree with it. I think the Chagas is, of course, the younger fighter here. He's the guy that, I mean, he had a, you know, in his UFC debut, he had a tough fight against, Moraes, and he hung in there. I mean, again, controversial type of decision, but I mean, he was definitely game in that fight. And Moraes is no joke. I mean, he has a win, of course, over a guy like Magny. So, I mean, Chagas is right there for, with all the UFC jitters and all that, I'm expecting him to actually perform a little bit better in this spot here against Silva. And I think what Chagas brings to the table is he's got pretty good striking again offensively. The guy definitely has some pop in his punches or his kicks. That's not a good sign for Silva's chin. On the ground, Chagas, I think, can hang. I mean, I think the Silva early on especially might be a little bit better on the ground, especially with his offensive wrestling. But Chagas, I think, will not get submitted on the ground against Silva. I think he'll be able to scramble out of bad positions and be okay on the ground. And then as the fight wears on a little bit, even though Chagas does tend to slow a little bit as well, I think he's going to have a little bit of the cardio edge. I do trust Chagas' chin a little bit more as well. So I think he's just going to be the more dangerous fighter. And again, there's more upside to him. He's only 23 years old. I expect him to improve fight by fight. Silva, I don't see that. I think even at age 32, he's not an old man, but at the same time, he's had a lot of fights throughout his career. I mean, with all the stuff with USADA coming in and testing, we know that some of these fighters look different recently. I think the Silva's maybe falls under that category. Not fair to say, but I mean, it's just weird. You know, you see certain fighters with their physiques looking one way, and then now with USADA, they look completely different. And I think that is the case for Silva. If you look at his last weigh-ins and you look at his last performance, it wasn't that great. So a lot of question marks behind Silva right now, honestly. So I'm going to go with Chagas. I think the Silva, if he's on, he could definitely win this fight. I mean, he's capable of doing so. He's a pretty good fighter, dangerous fighter, but I think ultimately I trust Chagas more at this point. I think there is more upside to him. And I do like him as far as winning and as plus money where he was at. I like him as a bet. So I do understand the way people were coming in on this fight and why they're backing Chagas here. And I do think he's probably going to get the W. So I'm going to pick him to win as well.
Eric Silva's a guy that had so much potential. He would come in and just steamroll fighters, and people were praising him and that he could be the next big thing. But that all started to go down the tubes after his loss to Donghyung Kim, where he got knocked out cold. You know, the John Fitch fight, at least he hung around for three rounds and it was entertaining. But Kim put him out, and then Matt Brown put him out. And then now even guys like in his last fight, Nordin Taleb put him out. So it just has not been impressive to see kind of his evolution. Because he's not evolving. It seems like he's getting worse. His chin's getting worse and his conditioning's getting worse. He doesn't have that same early explosion that he used to have. You know, he was able to get some impressive wins in his career against, you know, guys like Mike Rhodes, Josh Koscheck, but at Jason High, probably the best one of them all. But again, none of those guys are even in the UFC anymore. I don't think anyone he's beaten is still in the UFC, which is not a good sign. And Luan Chagas, if you watched his UFC debut, I mean, he looked tremendous, especially that first round against Moraes. I mean, he was outstriking Moraes. He was throwing great combinations. He had Moraes in big trouble with the kick and very smartly dropped him and then immediately told him to get back up, didn't jump into his guard all haphazardly. So the guy's got good fight IQ. And then when Moraes finally started to get his grappling going, Chagas was able to hang around and not get submitted against one of the better grapplers in the entire UFC. So I think Luan Chagas is a very good fighter. The only thing that was really hurting him in that last fight was that he took it on really short notice and kind of ran out of conditioning a little bit. So overall, I think with a full training camp, Chagas should have no problem hanging toe-to-toe with Eric Silva. I think he throws just as good combinations as Silva, hits just as hard as Silva, mixes it up just as well as Silva. without some of Silva's issues. So, cause you got to remember, even though Eric Silva was like the next big thing, he's already in his early 30s. And Chagas, on the other hand, definitely on the younger side at just 23 years old. So, I really do like Chagas here. As long as Silva isn't able to take him out in the first round, then I see Chagas winning probably by knockout. So my pick is going to be Luan Chagas. Now dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Jussier Formiga, who is 18-4, taking on Dustin Ortiz, who is 15-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Formiga minus 190 to come back on Ortiz at plus 150 right now over five dimes. Formiga minus 200 to come back on Ortiz is plus 170. So staying basically ballpark, line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there has been two-way action on this fight as well because early action was coming in on Ortiz. Now we're getting some action back on Formiga. So good spot to be in. And this is definitely a tough fight. And at first glance, it looks like, man, Ortiz at dog money against Formiga. Ortiz is really good. And he is really good, man. I mean, he's just a tremendous fighter at the weight class, no doubt about it. I mean, the guy could definitely hang with the top tier fighters and be competitive. I mean, he's got good striking on the feet. He's got really good wrestling. He's got good scrambling ability. Even if he gets out wrestled, he's able to basically get in scrambles and get back up to his feet or take the person's back. So Ortiz is a very complete MMA fighter and a very difficult out. But Formiga, in my opinion, he's more known for the diehard fans. You know that he's more known for his grappling ability, and it is phenomenal. I mean, the guy is a stud grappler on the ground, but he's getting better on the feet even. He's fought great competition. The guy has really, you could tell he's been making huge strides in his overall game and improvement. And then I'm talking about in particular his striking. I mean, he's got a little bit of pop on his punches now as well. He's a little bit more confident. He's not afraid to throw it down a little bit. But more than anything else, Formiga's the type of guy that is definitely a guy that is such an irritation if you fight him because he has such good grappling and he's one of these guys that hops on your back, gets on your back, and he could ride out a round just kind of going for the rear naked choke just by position, and you could lose points that way. So I'm not too sure that Ortiz is going to be able to scramble out of bad spots against Formiga because I think Formiga is going to get the hooks in, get his back, and just make life miserable for Ortiz if it does hit the floor a little bit. On the feet, I do give the edge a little bit to Ortiz. I think he's still a little bit more versed in the striking attack, but he is hittable. He has probably underachieved in his striking as of late, and I think Formiga is improving enough that it'll be at least close on the feet. So I think this is Formiga's fight to win or lose. It all depends. I mean, if he's not active, if he's not able to get the ground scrambles going against Ortiz, if he's not able to get his back, if he's not pushing the pace on the feet, then I could understand him losing to Ortiz. But I really do believe that Formiga at this point is just a little bit better than Ortiz. And I think that it's tempting to look at the dog with Ortiz because it should be a competitive fight. But really, I think Formiga is probably going to cruise to a 29-28 type of decision in this spot. So I do like what I see. I do like the improvements from Formiga. And again, I think Ortiz has kind of been a little bit more disappointing, and I think Formiga has been a little bit more impressive recently. So that really is not a bad sign either. So I'm going to go with Formiga here in this spot. I think he does probably get the decision win over Ortiz.
Both of these guys coming off of disappointments with Formiga losing his number one contender bout potentially to Cejudo, and Ortiz, you know, really getting steamrolled by Wilson Hayes, which was very surprising to me. But overall, if you look at their recent track record, even before those losses, then you have to think that this is Formiga's fight to lose. Formiga, obviously, if you're just playing MMA math, Formiga had a win over Wilson Hayes. Hayes wasn't able to get the ground game going against Formiga. Formiga was actually the better grappler, and Formiga actually outstruck Hayes, landed a couple good shots on the feet and rocked him a couple times. So, with some of the training that Formiga's been putting in at Nova Uniao, you can tell that his striking is definitely coming a long way. Now, Dustin Ortiz, he's more of the type of guy that looks for takedowns in the wrestling. On the feet, he has some pop in his hands, but he's not a tremendous striker. He's been outstruck multiple times on the feet by superior strikers. And when he gets top position on the ground, he can definitely lay into you, like in the Willie Gates fight. So I don't see him getting a lot of that working against Formiga. If he starts shooting in for takedowns trying to get top position against Formiga, I think he either doesn't get the takedown, he loses the scramble in the process and Formiga finds a superior dominant position, or maybe he tires himself out a little bit trying to get takedowns. So I don't think that part of his game is going to be successful at all. Maybe even if he gets a takedown, I think Formiga is going to be very threatening off of his back as well. Now, on the feet, Ortiz does have the better chin. We've seen Formiga get put out by guys like Joseph Benavidez, by John Dodson. So I do think that he's not quite at the elite of the elite level, but I think those guys are a cut above the other guys that have fought in the flyweight division. And I don't know. I don't think Justin Ortiz is going to be able to knock Formiga out, especially after the improvements that we've seen in Formiga's striking. So overall, I think the striking will be competitive, but probably not one-sided either way, unless Ortiz lands one big shot. And then on the ground, Formiga should dominate. So if the fight plays out like I think it plays out, unless Formiga gets knocked out cold at some point randomly, then I think Formiga is going to be able to win a decision, maybe even pull off a submission as this fight wears on. So my pick is going to be Jacir Formiga. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Rani Yahya, who is 20-8 with one no contest, taking on Michinori Tanaka, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Yahya, minus 125. The comeback on Tanaka, minus 115. So virtually a pick'em with a very, very slight lean towards Yahya. Line did climb up a little bit, and there has been some back-and-forth action, but a little bit more action still on Yahya here in this spot. It's minus 140 for him now. Comeback on Tanaka is at plus 120. Not really surprised. I mean, Yahya, man, I mean, the run that he's been on lately has been very impressive. I mean, it seems like I'm kind of expecting, and I'm sure more people are as well, him to kind of look old eventually. He's only 31 years old, so he's not old in MMA years, but he's been, I mean, he's not old in, I guess, in normal consideration, but in MMA years was what I'm trying to say. He is definitely, because he's been a vet. He's been around for a long time. I mean, he's fought who's who throughout his career of talent. I mean, and he's won most of those fights. He's been nothing but impressive. And on the ground, he's definitely one of the best bantamweights ever to really be in the UFC. I mean, as far as his skill set goes, he's got underrated wrestling. And then once he has you on the ground, man, I mean, it's just hard to deal with him in his scrambles. We're talking about, of course, in the last fight with a guy like Formiga. I mean, Yahya's on that kind of level as well. I mean, those guys are all such gifted grapplers, and they take your back. They could usually finish the fight if that's the case. If not, they could at least control you enough, and you can't out-scramble them in most cases, though. But Yahya has, at times, been actually slowed up enough and been put on his back and been controlled a little bit. I mean, off his back, he's not as dangerous at times. I mean, he does, obviously he's got the capability to throw up an arm bar, or triangle, scramble out of position or whatever, but, or get that guillotine choke that he's really famous for as well. But really, if you have good submission defense and good ground awareness, I mean, other fighters have shown it. You can kind of control Yahya on the ground. And I think Tanaka is kind of one of those guys, to be honest with you. I mean, Tanaka overall, he's been nothing but impressive, I think, throughout his UFC career thus far. He's had, of course, some pretty competitive fights, some squeaker fights along the way, but against decent competition. Now, this is another one of those guys that he's going to have to face. It's a decent competitor for sure. Yahya, he's been, like I said, on a heck of a streak. But Tanaka overall, I mean, his win over Soto in his last fight, I think it was pretty impressive. Of course, Soto hung in there, and it was a very close split decision type of fight. And it was a true split decision type of fight. I mean, it was close. Different judges could have easily seen it for Soto sitting in that spot. But that being said, Soto's a very talented fighter. I mean, on the ground, he's gifted as well. He's got good wrestling. He's got good stand-up. He's just – he's a tough out for many fighters. And Tanaka, actually, it's hard to say he didn't win that fight. I mean, he looked good in that fight. He got put in some bad spots. He showed toughness. He didn't give up. I mean, he didn't get submitted in, you know, in those spots as well. And I think here in this matchup with Yahya, of course, Yahya is a different beast. I mean, he's a different type of grappler than a guy, obviously, like Soto in his last fight. But I do think Tanaka has a little bit more advantage on the feet than he did over a guy like Soto. I mean, Tanaka has the speed advantage. I think he's got the more precision striking and the more power advantage on the feet. So I could see him clipping Yahya's chin. Yahya has been knocked out a couple times. He's been rocked in the past as well. I think Tanaka couldn't possibly get his first knockout win against a guy like Yaya. I mean, it's to the point where, again, he's had all those fights and along his career that chin is not going to get any better. So I think Tanaka has that chance. And then, of course, on the ground, I think Tanaka scrambles well enough that he could probably get in top position along the way and maintain top position. So I think that Tanaka could be okay on the ground against Yaya. I think he can win the stand-up battle as well. So I am going to pick Tanaka in this spot. I think that, again, he's got a little bit more upside. I mean, he's only 25. He's a little bit fresher. I think he's going to get better. He's going to continue to improve, and he is going to be a force in the bantamweight division. There's no doubt about that. So tough fight to pick because you can never underestimate the talent of Yaya. And I mean, every time you do, it seems like he sneaks up on you and beats a prospect that most people are really thinking that he's going to lose against. I mean, even in his last fight against Lopez, I mean, that was pretty impressive. But I think here he's biting off a little bit more than he could chew. Tanaka is a savvy vet. He's been tested. He's going to probably pass this test as well. So I'm picking Tanaka. Maybe by decision, or like I said, I could see him obviously probably not subbing a guy like Yaya, although Yaya has been subbed in his career before, but I doubt that happens. I think it's either going to be knockout or a decision for Tanaka, so I'm going to go his way.
This fight should definitely be competitive. You have two extremely competent grapplers getting in there and tangling with each other. Now, if this goes to the ground, and I'm pretty sure it will, you kind of have to favor Yaya, for me at least, because multiple times, especially recently, he's been in there in grappling situations against pretty solid grapplers, and he's gotten the better of them. Now, the last fight, he definitely was able to pull off the submission late, but even before then, he was able to sneak out a couple decisions in fights that I think a lot of people were thinking that, you know, maybe Ronnie Yaya's time is starting to run out, and he still was able to get fights to the floor and maintain solid positioning and win decisions. So maybe Michinori Tanaka might be biting off a little bit more than he can chew if he wants to, you know, tussle with Ronnie Yaya on the ground. That being said, on the feet, Yaya has always never been very good in the stand-up department. That's never been a strength for him. He's been hurt on the feet by several guys that had really good takedown defense. And while Tanaka is not an amazing striker, I do think that he is probably a little bit better than Yaya in the stand-up department. So the longer this fight stays standing, I actually think Tanaka might have a slight edge in terms of physique. Both of these guys are almost virtually identical, I think. They have the same reach, 67 inches. Height, 1 inch difference. Yaya is actually an inch taller. So I don't think either guy really has a major physical advantage in terms of striking and reach and all that stuff. It's just more technique. And in terms of technique, I'd say Tanaka is a little bit better in the stand-up, and Yaya is probably a little bit better on the ground. Yaya's conditioning has kind of been an issue in the past, but he pulled off a third-round submission in his last fight, and Tanaka was exhausted in the third round of his fight against Joe Soto. Now, granted, that fight was very action-packed, very intense, and they were really going at it for the full 15 minutes. But I thought Tanaka's conditioning definitely isn't so great. You know, you always do see the Japanese fighters, they get a bit of a jet lag coming over from Japan. So I think that could affect Tanaka as well. So I'm going to lean Ronnie Yaya. I think that his ground game is just so good still, and his conditioning is improving. And then with Tanaka and the jet lag and everything, I think that might just be enough to give Yaya the slight edge. So I'm going to side with Ronnie Yaya here. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Gilbert Burns, who is 11-1, taking on Michel Prezeris, who is 20-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Burns -185, the comeback on Prezeris at +145. Line staying ballpark right now. It's Burns, well, actually exactly, -185 right now, 5 dimes, and Prezeris is +160. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been some movement back and forth on this fight as well. Two-way action. Looks like a decent line. I mean, it is a tough fight because, in my opinion, man, Prezeris, talk about overachiever. The guy has been outstanding. I mean, he's a little spark plug in the lightweight division, a powerhouse. I mean, the guy definitely has capabilities to get the fight to the ground and not wrestle most people in the division for sure. He's that type of grinder, gritty fighter. He's got a good ground game. He's capable of submitting people as well. So Prezeris on the ground is no slouch at all. I mean, he can usually get it there when he wants to. And then on the feet, I mean, he's not really known for his striking, but man, the guy is getting better. I mean, you can't underestimate his power. I mean, he has that aggression. He comes forward. He looks a lot more confident in most cases on the feet as well. So the guy is a pretty complete fighter. You cannot underestimate him in any area, but he's in a tough matchup stylistically for him here against Burns. I mean, Burns is going to be the much longer fighter. And then on the ground, really, in the lightweight division, I don't think there's anybody that's going to be able to compete and not get out grappled by Burns at this point. I mean, maybe I'm underestimating, or maybe there's somebody I'm forgetting about, but overall in the lightweight division, I understand there's better wrestlers than Burns, but as far as a pure jiu-jitsu standpoint, Burns is phenomenal. I mean, you put this guy on his back, he's either going to scramble out, get top position to submit you from your back, or, you know, getting a superior position, arm triangle, something like that, or he's going to submit you from his back. He'll throw up a triangle, he'll throw up an arm bar, whatever the case may be. The guy is that good. I mean, you don't want to play with Burns at all on the ground. And that's been proven so far. I mean, how many times have we seen him, you know, maybe even not looking the greatest in the fight, but as soon as it hits the floor, man, it's a wrap. I mean, that's the kind of fighter Burns is. And typically, Prezeris likes to get the fight to the ground, control people. I don't think he's going to want to play that game against Burns. So this is probably going to be a case where the ground game neutralizes each other out a little bit, and we're going to see a little bit more of a stand-up war. Now, Prezeris, I think, is a harder hitter, but I think Burns is the more diverse striker. I think Burns can mix it up a little bit better. Again, he's going to have the reach advantage here as well. So I just think it's a difficult matchup for Prezeris, but it's a tough one at the betting window, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know if I would seriously lay 2-1, basically. I mean, that's what you're getting here, almost 2-1 against a guy like Prezeris, because Prezeris is a sleeper. And if he doesn't get caught by anything crazy here, I think it will be competitive on the scorecards. But Burns is just, I think, too talented. And something tells me that he's probably going to get the job done, whether it is on the scorecards or maybe he does become the first person to actually finish and stop Prezeris in the UFC or in his career, to be said. So I don't know. I mean, it is stylistically a tough matchup. It's an interesting matchup. Really don't know how it's going to play out till they get in there again, one of those cases. But I do lean a little bit more towards the favorite Burns. I do like his length. I do like his skill set against a guy like Prezeris. I think it's going to get him by in this fight, and he probably comes away with the W here.
Michelle Prezeris has, you know, been an overachiever so far in his UFC career. He's had some impressive victories over the likes, particularly of Mirbek Taisimov, but I think maybe he just got Taisimov at the right time in his career, maybe whatever, but overall, you know, Prezeris has gone 4-1 in the lightweight division. It's been pretty impressive. That being said, it's not exactly like his last couple victories were dominant showcases against top talent. It was a split decision win over Valmir Lazaro and then a unanimous decision over JC Cottrell. So I don't exactly think that he's a world beater. Prezeris does have some power on the feet. He does have some pretty good takedowns. Conditioning has definitely been an issue for him in his career. And he does fight better in Brazil than he has fought outside of Brazil. So I'll give him that. But against Gilbert Burns, I think Prezeris is going to be at a striking disadvantage, even though Burns has been outstruck by, you know, some talented guys like Magomedov and among others, and Alex Oliveira. But Burns should be the better striker here. He looked really good in his last fight. I was actually extremely impressed with Gilbert Burns against Luka Sajewski. His striking looked good. His ground game is phenomenal. So this time around, I think Burns kind of takes away a lot of Prezeris' strengths. If Prezeris wants to get the takedown, he's got to then deal with one of the best ground fighters in the lightweight division. So I expect that Prezeris won't be able to get the ground game going. I don't think he'll want to. And on the feet, he pretty much has a puncher's chance because Burns should be the better overall striker. And I think Burns probably has a little bit better conditioning as well. So overall, Prezeris only has a puncher's chance, so I really can't pick him. So I'm going to side with Gilbert Burns here. I think he submits Michelle Prezeris or can potentially coast to a decision victory. So my pick is Gilbert Burns. Now moving on to the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have a featherweight contest between Godofredo Pepe, who is 13-4, and Mike De La Torre, who was 14-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Pepe, minus 155. De La Torre, plus 115. Line has stayed steady. It's minus 150 for Pepe right now, plus 130 on Torre, De La Torre. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming in this fight. Nothing huge as far as opinion goes or, you know, trendy pick here. I think a lot of people are kind of split, and it seems like it's all right in this fight. And you know, the case may be because both these guys are a little bit suspect in their ability to defend. I mean, Pepe, his chin is pretty bad. I mean, he really cannot take power shots in this spot. I mean, he's been knocked out a couple times in his career. Even, you know, obviously look at the fight, of course, with Sam Cecilia. He got on the ground with Pepe, got in his guard and just started pounding him. So, I mean, Pepe has definitely a suspect chin, even if it's in, even on the ground, not even standing up. But offensively, Pepe is definitely a dangerous guy. I mean, he's explosive. He does got some speed. He's got some power. I mean, we could see his aggressiveness. I mean, the jumping knee that he had over Lahat, for example. I mean, that's crazy. And I mean, how could you defend sometimes against that? You just gotta be smart and accept or expect some wildness to come out of Pepe. But that aggression does lead to worse defense at times as well for Pepe. So he could be dangerous because of that aggression, but it obviously leads him to being a little bit more susceptible to getting hit and getting put out as well. So the part that you gotta like about Pepe is definitely his ground game. I mean, he's underrated still, even though he's getting some of that respect he deserves on the ground. He's capable of submitting people and finishing people off his back. I mean, his win over Feely was nothing but impressive, in my opinion. I mean, that's the kind of fighter he is. You can't underestimate him for one second. You can't sleep on the guy, especially even if you are on top. I mean, the guy's definitely trying to go after an arm, trying to get you in the triangle choke, trying to finish the fight, trying to scramble out of position. So Pepe's ground is legit, and he could give a lot of fighters fit here. But matchup-wise, De La Torre actually matches up pretty good with Pepe. I think he is the better wrestler overall. I think he obviously comes from a good camp with the MMA lab. I mean, he has some killers there that he trains with all the time. The aggression that I'm talking about, Pepe, I think he'll be able to deal with. But the flaws with De La Torre, again, is he has been caught sometimes. I mean, he got quickly submitted. He's gotten knocked out really quick as well in fights before too. So he's definitely has that shot where or that chin that is a little bit suspect. You can't really – I mean, he's taggable. He recovers quickly, but it depends on the referee. I mean, if he gets rocked to a point where the ref's not going to let him recover, then he's going to be in some serious trouble there. So I don't question the toughness of De La Torre. I just question a little bit his chin. And then again, on the ground, even though offensively I think he's talented and he has an underrated submission game, defensively he has been caught in a few subs. So – those are the flaws with both guys. I mean, defensively, they're flawed. But offensively, again, for De La Torre, I think he has enough power to test that chin of Pepe. I think he could put Pepe out, even if he's in top position on the ground. I think he could repeat something like Sam Cecilia did against Pepe. I think he has that kind of power. I think if he's able to sprawl brawl, keep this fight upright, he's going to have an edge as well on the feet. I think he's just got better boxing. So I think this is a bad matchup in a way for Pepe. De La Torre has to watch the aggression and he has to be cautious in this fight, but I think it's a fight that he can definitely win, even if it is in enemy territory in Brazil. So Pepe's going to be pumped. He's going to be ready to go here. Not an easy fight for De La Torre, but I do like De La Torre. And I think he's one of these fighters that kind of flies under the radar and is tougher than most people think. And he's more skilled than most people think as well, because he's such a well-rounded fighter overall. So hopefully his defense does hold up, because if so, I think he's going to probably get the win here, probably by finish over Pepe. So I think I'm going to go with the dog here in De La Torre, and I think he gets the W.
And while it's understandable that De La Torre could get the win, he is a pretty solid overall striker. His boxing is pretty good. He has a lot of power in his hands. And if he can get top position, he actually has a decent ground and pound as well. That being said, I just feel Pepe is a little more dangerous. I mean, his submission game is legit, very crafty, very long limbs, and he can knock people out on the feet too. He has some pretty good flying knee attacks. He can be reckless and wild and crazy, which kind of plays right into De La Torre's game. So however long this fight lasts, I expect it to be extremely entertaining. But the fact that Pepe is fighting in Brazil, I think you can't discount that. We've seen a lot of fighters recently that probably weren't good enough to beat someone on neutral ground pick up wins because they were, you know, fighting on their home turf, and, you know, they kind of just got jazzed up just enough to pull it off. I do think that while Pepe's chin is not very good, neither is De La Torre's. And De La Torre also, you know, has been submitted pretty quickly in the past by Ortega. So I think this is a fight where Pepe actually has a pretty good shot, as long as he can either connect with something solid to hurt De La Torre or latch on to something. So overall, I actually feel that Pepe's got this. That's pretty much it. So my pick is going to be Godofredo Pepe. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Thiago Santos, who is 13-4, taking on Eric Spicely, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Santos minus 505, the comeback on Spicely plus 335. I know it's kind of a steep line for a guy like Thiago Santos, even though he's getting more respect and, you know, he definitely has put together some solid wins thus far in his UFC career. Opening that high against most people, you would think, wow, I mean, there's got to be something up here, right? But I just think stylistically, it is that kind of fight for him. But people came in on Spicely early on, and then the dog price dropped drastically for a bit. But now as we get closer to fight time, I think reality struck, and a lot of people that did their homework came back in and noticed that Santos's takedown defense is probably going to be good enough here to control this fight, because on the feet, Santos has a huge, huge edge. I mean, if you look at Spicely, I mean, striking is definitely not his best attribute. He's a ground guy. He wants to get the fight to the floor. He does have okay wrestling, and he's capable in most cases to get the fight to the ground. And once on the ground, the guy has a really good submission game. So he's ground savvy. The guy is more than capable of beating a lot of guys. But in this matchup against a guy like Santos, I think he's just not going to be able to get the fight to the ground. And Santos on the feet is just going to torch him. I mean, I kind of feel bad for Spicely in this spot, to be honest with you. So it's really Santos by knockout, or Spicely probably gets a sub. You know, gets it to the ground and gets a sub. I just don't think Spicely's going to be able to get the takedown here. Santos has shown overall. I know he's been put on his back in fights, but I think overall in this case, especially how Spicely's wrestling matches up with Santos, I don't think it's going to happen here. I think Santos is going to be able to keep it upright and on the feet again. He's just going to destroy Spicely. So it's pretty clear cut, in my opinion. And I think the line, you know, I don't want to say anything justified at around minus 600, but 500 or 600 I think is fair in this spot here. I mean, if Spicely pulls off the upset, much respect to him. You know, it'll be really excellent for the sportsbooks, I'm sure, because they're going to want a parlay buster in that spot. But I don't know. I just don't think it's reality right here. I think Spicely probably loses this fight by knockout as well, and he's probably handed his walking papers from the UFC after this fight, and Santos gets back on track. And he has some potential. I mean, he needs to definitely tighten up some holes in his game, but Santos can definitely be a threat in the UFC. So I think that Santos's fight to win or lose, and I think he probably gets the job done here.
Yeah, this is another fight that I think is pretty cut and dry. Thiago Santos has pretty underrated takedown defense, and before the fight against Gegard Mousasi, I mean, he was showcasing some insane striking ability. He's just not quite on Mousasi's level. But that being said, he had a really good performance against Elias Theodoro. He went out there and crushed Nate Marquardt, had a really impressive knockout of Steve Bosse, smoked Andy Enns. So overall, and don't forget the Ronnie Marquez victory. I mean, he's had a really solid run in the UFC. He's just maybe not quite top 10, maybe top 8 or 9 in the middleweight division. But against Eric Spicely, I think he's going to look really good. I mean, we saw Spicely, who is really known for having an excellent ground game, and he had a lot of trouble with Sam Alvey in his last fight. Alvey actually submitted him pretty quick in the first round, which was pretty surprising. So I think with Santos being in ready to go, ready to prove himself, and angry about that last fight, and with Eric Spicely pretty much being a submission or bust type of fighter, that I don't see Spicely getting those takedowns. His wrestling has never been that great, and I think Santos lights him up at some point and probably puts him out. So my pick is going to be Thiago Santos here. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Francisco Trinaldo, who is 20-4, taking on Paul Felder, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Trinaldo, minus 130. The comeback on Felder at minus 110. And right now, it is actually Trinaldo, minus 130. The comeback on Felder is plus 110. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been two-way action on this fight as well. Trinaldo got bet up. Now he's getting bet back down a little bit. And I wouldn't be surprised to see this line flip, to be honest with you. I think it'll just be one of those lines that kind of seesaw back and forth. But hard to argue Trinaldo being the favorite in this spot. I mean, man, it's been impressive the run that he's been on. I mean, I'm surprised in a way, because it's not like they're giving him easy competition. I mean, and he's been coming through as an underdog throughout most of these fights as well. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, the win over Pearson, in my opinion, was very impressive. The win over Laprise is very impressive. I mean, even Norman Park, I mean, in his last fight against Medeiros, I think it was to be expected from a lot of people there as well. But, I mean, he's been on a heck of a run here, and he's not getting any younger either. That's the funny thing. I mean, he's 38 years old, and I think he's at the peak of his game. It's a shame that he didn't come to the UFC a little bit sooner, because I think if we did see him in his youth, and especially with his ability to improve like this, man, I mean, sky's the limit. He could have been wearing that lightweight strap, to be honest with you. I mean, that's how good this guy is, or could have been at one time. But that being said, he's got his hands full against Felder here. And again, if you just look at their recent resumes, I mean, you would think, wow, Trinaldo's has a great shot to beat Felder, especially how he matches up with him, because Trinaldo has a great ground game. I mean, he's got underrated wrestling, and of course he's got knockout power and good striking on the feet as well to go along with it. So, I mean, that's a handful for anybody. But Felder, I think in this spot, honestly, it's going to be a tough out for Trinaldo, because I don't think Trinaldo is going to be able to control Felder on the ground. I think Felder is going to be able to keep upright. And on the feet, even though Trinaldo is a very dangerous and effective striker, I think Felder mixes things up a little bit better. When he's on, I mean, I think it's a thing of beauty watching him strike, honestly. He just, he's a little bit unorthodox. He's got some power for sure behind him as well. I think this is a spot where a lot of people, again, are going to kind of do the MMA math and say, look, Felder lost to Pearson and Trinaldo has an impressive win over Pearson and whatnot too. But throw that out the window. I think realistically, the way these guys match up is pretty close. And I think that Felder actually has the edge standing, in my opinion. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, at age 38, Trinaldo is not getting any younger, even though he's looked great. I think it comes to a point where all of a sudden, you know, you start getting clipped, you start getting knocked out. It's not going to be a good thing moving forward. And, you know, maybe he hits that decline spot sooner than later. So if that's the case, I think the Felder might be able to clip him and knock him out here in this spot. If it hits the scorecards, I think we're going to see a war. It'll be a competitive war. I think Felder can win on the scorecards there. It's going to be tough because obviously it's in Trinaldo's backyard. So we never know how the cards are going to go with the hometown guy, obviously having slight edge with the crowd. And you know, you would think the judges, if they're going to favor anybody, favor that side. But judges, you never know. They're so unpredictable these days. So that being said, I think legitimately, if you look at it, take the judges out of the equation, because you kind of have to, because you never know what the heck they're going to do. I think Felder can win on the scorecards, and I think Felder has a better chance to actually stop Trinaldo than vice versa. So tough fight. I understand it. I could see either guy coming away with a win here, but I honestly have to lean a little bit more towards Felder. I think that he's more than capable of pulling off a fight like this. And if he does get this notch, you know, the win and gets this W on his resume, it's going to be impressive, and it kind of will give him the confidence he needs to maybe start improving, get a little bit better, and maybe eventually get in the title mix at lightweight. So it's going to be interesting to see. So I am going to lean Felder here in this spot. I just think that maybe people are underestimating him a little bit too much. So I'm going to go with him.
I do understand that Francisco Trinaldo is getting up there in age. I mean, he is 38 years old. That's ancient in the lightweight division, but he just doesn't fight like it. If you go back and watch most of his fights at 155 pounds, he's the one lighter on his feet. He's the one outstriking and winning decisions against guys like Norman Park, Chad Laprise, Ross Pearson. I mean, he was all over the place against Ross Pearson. I was floored by his performance. It really was one of the better ones of his career. And then the last fight against Yancy Medeiros, that's kind of where he started to slow down. That being said, there's a reason he slowed down in that fight. You know, in the Ross Pearson fight where he was bouncy and just put on a great performance, he landed 51 strikes over three rounds. Against Yancy Medeiros, he had Medeiros just in huge trouble in a fight of the night winning performance and landed more than twice as many strikes, plus two takedowns. I mean, Trinaldo just expended so much energy. I kind of will give him the benefit of the doubt for the fact that he got tired in that fight. So, I think in this time around, it's going to be a bit more of a cautious approach. I think both of these guys are respecting each other's power and ability to, do a lot of damage. Felder, I like him. I think he is a really talented striker, but he kind of falls in love with, all the spinning attacks. And he does just a little bit, goes a little bit overboard, in my opinion. And I think that that is to his detriment. So, against somebody like Trinaldo, I think if Trinaldo just stays within himself here and kind of goes after Felder, maybe from the outside, circling away and landing occasional body kicks, which are very heavy from Trinaldo's end, and mixing in the boxing, then he'll be in pretty good shape. He just does not want to play Felder's game of, you know, just trading really exciting, high-flying kind of stuff at each other. In terms of ground game, we've seen Felder actually utilize the ground game a little bit against somebody like Darren Cruikshank in a fight that he was losing, definitely. So that's another fighter that he was getting outstruck in. Felder was outstruck by Barboza, by Ross Pearson, and then Darren Cruikshank, and then he kind of utilized his ground game a little bit to pick up a victory. So I think the ground game is not going to be super successful against Rinaldo because he actually can pull off takedowns himself. So I don't think Felder has better wrestling than Rinaldo. So for me, it's, is Felder a better striker? Is Felder a more successful and technical striker than Rinaldo? And I just cannot say yes, not at this point in Rinaldo's career where he is on a 6-fight win streak and is looking as good as he's ever looked. So I'm going to side with Francisco Rinaldo here. He'll be my pick. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Roy Nelson, who is 22-13, who is taking on Antonio Bigfoot Silva, who is 19-9 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up Nelson minus 380, the comeback on Silva at plus 260. Right now it's Nelson minus 450, the comeback on Silva is plus 360. So not surprised, really. I mean, look at stylistically the matchup here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on a couple of these last few fights here, and it's including this one, obviously, here, because it's pretty clear-cut here. I mean, Antonio Silva is definitely a talented heavyweight. He's accomplished some great things throughout his career and in the UFC, but his chin is more than suspect, and he's facing one of the hardest hitters in the weight class, and Roy Nelson. And I think it's pretty obvious what we're going to see here. Silva's probably not going to be able to take Nelson down. He's going to end up getting clipped by a big bomb and get put out. I mean, there's no way that chin could take Silva or Nelson's punches at this point of his career. I mean, it's not getting any better. I can't believe – I feel kind of bad for Silva, to be honest with you, here in this spot. I can't believe they matched it because, obviously, you don't want to see Silva continue to get knocked out like he has. And now he's facing another guy that, honestly, he's going to probably get knocked out against, and a guy like Roy Nelson. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Silva actually hang him up after this fight. He suffers another knockout loss. I mean, for his own health, for – you know, his family, everything that's at stake here, he does not need to continue fighting if that's the case. Now, if he pulls off the win, you can argue the case that maybe he should continue because it would be a pretty big upset here, obviously, as well. So he'll get himself back in the mix. But I think he doesn't pull off the win here. I could see him if his chin holds up. Of course he can decision Nelson. A lot of people, almost everybody decisions Roy Nelson here. But Silva also has big power on the feet as well. I mean, Nelson has a granite chin, so it'd be tough to put him away. But, I mean, Silva definitely could do it. I mean, these heavyweights can knock each other out, but I just don't think that's going to be the case here. I think Silva's going to approach this fight cautiously because he knows he's going to have to against a guy like Nelson, and Nelson's going to put him to sleep. I mean, it's as simple as that. So not surprising here, but I'm going to go with Nelson. I think he does knock Silva out. It's probably in the first round, and I mean, it's not going to be a shocker to us all, probably. So Nelson is aside.
Yeah, this is another fight that, again, pretty straightforward. Roy Nelson, not the fastest anymore, but still has a ton of pop in his hands versus Antonio Silva, who's not fast, has pop in his hands, but whose chin might be the worst now in the heavyweight division. It was probably the worst a few fights ago, a few knockout losses ago. I mean, it's just crazy that this guy is still competing in the UFC after the punishment that he's been through. I mean, you look and he has first round knockout loss to Stefan Struve. First round knockout loss to Mark Hunt. First round knockout loss to Frank Mir. First round knockout loss to Andrei Arlovsky in four of his last five fights. So, I mean, the guy has taken so much punishment and has been put out cold repeatedly. And now he's facing one of the heaviest hitters, one of the guys with the most knockouts in the UFC heavyweight division. I just think this is a nightmare matchup. Now, if Nelson is not able to knock him out, we've seen Antonio Silva pull off, you know, some crazy comebacks, like against Alistair Overeem and Travis Brown. But for the most part, I mean, this guy just can't take the punishment anymore. One good shot should be all it takes. And I think Roy Nelson has that one good shot in him. And even if he doesn't land it and he starts to get tired, I think Nelson might be able to pick up some takedowns. I mean, he was able to get the grappling game going against Derek Lewis. Lewis was just so big and strong that he was able to keep getting up. But Overall, I think Roy Nelson does put Antonio Silva out in this fight, so I'm going to pick him. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have former bantamweight champion Hayden Barrow, who is 35-4, taking on Felipe Nelver, who is 12-6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Barrow minus 400 to come back on Nelver at plus 280. Right now, it's actually Barrow minus 450 to come back on Nelver is plus 360, similar line to the last one, Nelson versus Silva. My, how things have changed. I mean, first of all, Barrow obviously fighting up at featherweight now. Didn't look all that bad in his featherweight debut against Jeremy Stephens, but Stephens is obviously a tough out. Big change in pace for Barrow. I mean, and Barrow hasn't really looked that great in the last few performances. I mean, even some of the W's he's been able to get. So are we seeing a sign of decline from Barrow? I think it's kind of fair to say a little bit. I mean, he hasn't looked great. So this is definitely a fight that he could possibly get himself back on track and get the W here and beat a guy like Nelver, but Nover's no slouch either. The funny thing is, I think Nelver's probably going to be a little bit more competitive than most of us all think in this fight against Barrow. But that being said, I mean, both these guys are well-rounded. They both have similar skill sets. Just Barrow's a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more dangerous in all aspects of the game. I mean, his striking, his ground game, of course. So Nelver's just one of these guys that is really good. I mean, he could, again, kind of surprise you how good he is with his wrestling, with his grappling game. I mean, even his stand-up game. I mean, he does mix things up pretty well. It's just I don't trust him as much as far as – I mean, both these guys are a little bit chinny now, obviously, you could say. I mean, they could both get clipped and be hurting a little bit. I mean, both of them are tough enough, I think, to survive and recover, but obviously that will cost them some rounds or even possibly cause them to get subbed. But also, Nelver has seemed to slow down a little bit as the fight progresses, and this is going to be a war against Barrow. I mean, both these guys, there's just question marks around both, honestly, right now still. But I think Nelver's kind of one of the guys that's always flying under the radar, maybe not getting enough respect, especially since, you know, he didn't win the Ultimate Fighter and his career wasn't as expected in the UFC. A lot of hype behind Nelver and that Ultimate Fighter season that he had. But that being said, he's still, honestly, a pretty solid fighter and a tough out. But I just think Barrow has him pretty much in every area. I'm not sure where Nelver can win this fight at. I mean, obviously, he's going to be a little bit physically bigger. I mean, he's more of the natural 145-pounder for sure since Barrow is moving up to this weight class. But I think Barrow is going to be game here. I think Barrow is going to be able to outstrike Nelver on the feet. I think he's going to be able to control him if the fight takes the place on the floor as well, possibly even finish him. So I do lean Barrow. I just think you guys have to be a little bit cautious right now. I mean, minus 450, is there true value on a guy like Barrow, especially over a pretty talented, underrated fighter like Nelver? I don't think so. So I think you kind of stay away, watch this fight, see how it plays out. Hopefully it's a good competitive fight, and you know, we all get to watch some quality MMA because both these guys are more than capable of producing that. So I'm going to pick Barrow. It's not going to be a surprise here. I think he does probably get the W over Nelver.
To me, this seems like a fight that they're putting together to try to get Hayden Barrow back on track after two tough losses. I thought that he looked decent in the Jeremy Stephens fight. It's just he couldn't quite keep up with Stephens physically. Barrow was a monstrous bantamweight, but in the featherweight division, he's just another guy. I mean, he's not even going to be able to stand up physically with Felipe Nelver, although Nelver was a former lightweight dropping down. That being said, Hayden Barrow, in terms of skill set, should definitely have the edge here. Barrow is still a pretty talented striker. He showcased some good things in that Stephens fight. He brought in some uppercuts. He had some good combinations going. It's just, once Stephens started to settle in, he just couldn't quite stand toe-to-toe with him. And Barrow could not get the takedowns against somebody that was just so physically strong. Against Nelver, I think Barrow might be able to get the takedowns. Nelver has been a little bit more grappling focused since his return to the UFC. Now, that helped him in his one win in, I think it was Korea, where he picked up the victory over Yui Chul Nam. But the last time around, Zabera Tukhugov, it was a competitive fight, but Nelver could not get the takedowns going. And Tukhugov actually had one. It wasn't the greatest fight. Both guys were pretty tentative overall, not a lot of strikes thrown, but Tukhugov ended up getting the better of him. And I think Tukhugov is on a similar level to Hayden Barrow at this point. While I expect Nelver to be pretty competitive, because on the feet he actually is not bad, I just don't think that Nova is quite on Barrow's level. And even though Barrow is, you know, this is just his second fight at featherweight, I think that maybe he started to pack on a little bit of muscle to start to fit in a little bit in this division. And I think that this is the test that he should be able to pass if he wants to be competitive against even middling guys in the featherweight division. So my pick is going to be Hayden Barrow. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a women's catchweight fight at 140 pounds between Chris Cyborg, who is 16-1 with one no contest, and Lena Landsberg, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'm at Cyborg minus 1200 to come back on Landsberg at plus 600. And right now it's minus 1275 to come back on Landsberg. It's plus 825. So line staying basically ballpark to where the opener was. And I mean, just a ridiculous line. I mean, most of Cyborg's lines are ridiculous, and that's for a reason. I mean, she's a dominant female striker. I mean, powerful, precise, has good takedown defense. I mean, she's basically like the Mike Tyson of the women's division. Let's face it. I mean, she gets rid of most competition in the first round. A lot of people can't weather that storm. And Landsberg, make her UFC debut against that type of fighter, even though she is known for her striking as well. I mean, she's definitely a pretty technical striker, has some ability for sure. I think she can win some fights in the UFC. She's not a young, up-and-coming fighter, though. She's 34 years old. Still MMA years, she's young. I mean, she's not over the hill or on the decline or anything like that. But still, I think that really her best attribute is her striking. I mean, she's known as the elbow princess, and she does utilize her elbows well, even on the ground. I mean, she does look for some takedowns from time to time. She can get top position, and she can drop some nasty ground and pound. But in this fight against Cyborg, if you look, I mean, the way she matches up with Cyborg, she's got to be a little bit too slow. I mean, on the feet, this fight will stay up on the feet. I don't think Landsberg's going to be able to get Cyborg down, and she's going to want to in this spot. She's not going to be able to do so. And on the feet, I mean, it's going to be Cyborg's speed and power that's going to be too much for Landsberg. I mean, Landsberg's going to probably, you know, hang in there and try to strike with Cyborg for a little bit, but it's not going to take long. I think eventually Cyborg lands that big bomb, and Landsberg just, her UFC debut is unfortunately not going to be end too well for her. I mean, there's not much more to say in this spot. It's just, I mean, if Landsberg had a real clear path to victory here, if she could out-grapple Cyborg, if she's, you know, had amazing takedowns, I mean, I could say, hey, this is a challenge for Cyborg, you know, but, or if she was, again, a sniper on the feet, really technical, great defensively, a little bit more speed, a little bit better footwork, you know, I could make a case for her as well, but here, I just don't see it. I think the Cyborg is going to be the superior striker. I think she's going to be able to keep it upright, and I think she does what she always does best, and that's knock people out. So I'm going to pick Cyborg to win. That's not really a big shocker there. And unfortunately for Landsberg, like I said, I think her UFC debut is going to come at a loss. So the Cyborg train rolls on. It's going to be interesting to see if she ever gets the marquee matchup with Ronda Rousey. I doubt we see it, to be honest with you, but it's still an intriguing fight in a lot of people's minds, and you know, I would like to see it play out. But in this case, I think she continues the train again, the momentum going. I think she picks up another quality win, and I'm pleased she's getting a shot to headline a UFC card. And I know it's in Brazil. That's going to be big for her as well. So good stuff by the UFC bringing her in and letting her do this sort of thing. So I'm going to support Cyborg. I think she does get the W here.
I have to support Cyborg as well. Landsberg actually is a pretty talented fighter, 6-1 out of Sweden, and she's the elbow queen, not the princess, as far as I know. And, you know, those definitely could do some damage, but for the most part, I just can't side with her. She's given up a lot of size, I think, to Cyborg. And the thing that really is the only big threat to Cyborg is herself. She is just so big, and she takes so much out of herself to make 140 pounds. You saw it. She almost looked like a different person in her last fight. And that was a 5-pound difference, for making weight. And I think I saw that she had to cut 25 pounds this week to make the 140 pound limit. That is just nasty. I saw as much as, like yesterday that she still was at 155 pounds and still had 15 to go by Friday. So, just brutal weight cut. And that's really the only thing that I think could take Cyborg out is herself with the weight cut that she has to have. Landsberg has some good elbows. She's a pretty solid striker, but she can't match Cyborg's power. She can't match Cyborg's speed. And even though she has some Muay Thai skill, Cyborg is just so, so dangerous. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if Landsberg made her UFC debut and defeated Chris Cyborg. So I think this one ends pretty quickly, just like almost every one of Chris Cyborg's fights. And I think it ends in a violent knockout at some point. So unless Cyborg's weight cut is so bad that she can't even fight, then she should be in pretty good shape here to have a strong victory. So my pick is going to be Chris Cyborg. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 94. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.